matter is the case of Ma versus Larson and Lyson.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Sydney Tribe here on behalf of the appellants Ma. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. We are asking this Court to reverse summary judgment and enter summary judgment in my client's favor, stating that the CC&Rs in this case, along with the Burien Zoning Code, do permit the project that they have proposed and which the trial court enjoined. There are two separate issues with respect to the CC&Rs. First of all, the issue of the half-story. And second of all, the issue of the provision that provides that when the CC&Rs and the Burien Zoning Code are in conflict, that the zoning code prevails. I'll start with the conflict issue because I think it's probably the simpler of the two. The CC&Rs provide that the zoning code should prevail in the event of a conflict. Now, what would be the purpose of including such a provision? It clearly isn't to indicate that the CC&Rs would somehow permit a project that is in violation of the zoning code. No such project would be permitted. So the only reasonable interpretation is that if there is a circumstance where the CC&Rs might be interpreted to prohibit a particular project but the zoning code permits it, then when one permits and the other forbids, the zoning code prevails. This is a provision that was written into the CC&Rs.
Wouldn't that reading of that conflict provision, though, have to mean that any time there's a difference between the CC&R and the zoning code, you just go to the zoning code?
Well, no, because there could very well be that a project meets both, and then there's no conflict, and then there's no problem. But the drafters clearly anticipated that there might be a circumstance in which the zoning code would permit something that the CC&Rs would prohibit, and in that circumstance, they chose to...
I guess I would read that as saying that if the zoning code says 35 feet and the CC&R says 40 feet, well, the zoning code wins.
Well, but there's also the story restriction, and the zoning code permits only two-story buildings, whereas the CC&Rs permit 2.5 stories. However, the zoning code doesn't consider a basement to be a story. And so that's a specific circumstance of what, so it's not simply a matter of you always go with the zoning code. But I think the drafters noticed that there might be on a project-by-project basis a situation where there was some sort of conflict in the interpretation of each and said, well, okay, when that happens, the zoning code will control. And I don't think there's any other way to read that provision. Otherwise, the provision would be redundant. I mean, of course, if something violates the zoning code, it's not going to be permitted and it's not going to be built. So the anticipation was, on a project-by-project basis, when you have a circumstance where you have something, a two-story structure under the zoning code that is 35 feet or less, which is what the zoning code stated at the time, then that would be fine. But here, what you have is a project that is permitted by the zoning code that is being interpreted, at least, under the CC&Rs as being prohibited. And the CC&Rs clearly say that the code prevails.
So if the covenant had been explicit and said 22 feet is the maximum height of any building from grade in this development, but the zoning code said 35 feet, that express restriction would have no effect because the zoning code would control?
Well, it depends on whether or not it also complied with the stories provision.
Well, assume that there was height instead of stories, so we weren't focused on that term.
But the very fact that the CC&Rs don't indicate a particular height restriction suggests that...
All right. Let's assume that it said no house shall be more than two stories, and the zoning code said houses can be four stories. Does the four-story control over the covenants under your analysis?
If the CC&Rs explicitly prohibit something that the zoning code expressly permits, then I think it could be argued that the intent of the CC&Rs was to say the zoning code is just the ceiling and we want these to be stricter. But the problem that you have here is that you have an ambiguous zoning code or an ambiguous CC&Rs that recognized apparently their own ambiguity and said, in the circumstance where you can't tell, then the zoning code's going to prevail.
I think you better move, since you're begging the question with your reference to Story, to the argument that that particular provision is ambiguous.
Correct. And the half-story provision, obviously, because there is no indication as to what that refers to in terms of height, there's no definition of half-story, The record reflects, and certainly plenty of the case law cited and expert opinions in those cases reflect, that half-story is an industry building term that indicates a floor that is in half the, or less of the area of the floor below.
Let's break this down, because I know you are relying heavily on Foster, and I recognize there's expert opinion testimony referenced in Foster, but when you say the record, what does the record show in this case about half story?
Well, both parties admit that there's no record from 1947 when the original CC&Rs were drafted as to what the interpretation of half story was. And so the parties resorted to the circumstances and logic and, again, at least from our perspective, the fact that there are numerous cases throughout the country that refer to this term as meaning a story half the area. Now, I realize that case law is not the same thing as evidence. However, if you're talking about the surrounding circumstances of when these provisions were drafted, what would be in the mind of the folks drafting it when they write down the term half story? Do they mean a story that is literally half the height of the story below, as the Larsons and Lysons suggest? Given the entirety of the circumstances and the complete illogic of that interpretation, those were the circumstances that we relied on below and are relying on now to suggest that the only sensible definition and the definition that was in the mind of the drafters was the commonly understood definition that a half story refers to a story that is half or less of the floor space of the story below.
And this is a minor point, but as I understand it, the calculation for the half story is based on the proposed plan to expand the story below.
Yes, that's correct. And if you look at CP37, which is appended to my reply brief, you will see that the addition is a small little capsule on top of the much larger floor space below. I believe the calculation, which is not contested, that it's 39% of the floor space of the story below.
And but the story below isn't as built. It's the planned expansion.
Well, right, but again,
so it's 39% of what is planned to be built.
Right, but and again, there's not a significant expansion. I'm not sure if it's in the record as to what it would be in relation to the story below, as it's currently built. But you'll see from CP37 that the existing house is quite a bit larger than the rest. But I will reserve the remainder of my time for a while. Thank you.
Thank you. If it may please the court, David Bricklin representing the respondents, the Larsons and Ms. Lyson. This case, I think, draws a lot of direction from the ruling in the Viking case, where our Supreme Court indicated that for the first time, changing probably 100 years of case law, that covenants were to be construed to protect the collective interest. Prior to that case, the courts had construed restrictive covenants restrictively, narrowly. They viewed them as restraints on the free alienation of property, and so you limit their breadth and their construction. The justices in Viking Properties recognized that covenants really actually serve a very different purpose. They're collective efforts to limit the use of everyone's property for everyone's benefit.
And that proposition is mentioned in Foster. I mean, Foster doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of analysis.
Right.
It turned on the evidence, the extrinsic evidence, frankly.
Yes.
But they do have a line in there that seems to reference what is now the abandoned interpretation.
Yes, and which would call that opinion even further into question.
Well, although, in Bauman, we cited Foster for the proposition you can look at extrinsic evidence. And the Supreme Court does, too, so there's no question about that.
Right. I'm not questioning the extrinsic evidence part of that. I was questioning
the
earlier cases that narrowly construed covenants instead of recognizing that they preserve, that they are intended to benefit the community and therefore should be read broadly. And I note that the appellant attempts to say, well, we're trying to protect the collective good because the collective good is promoted if we allow larger houses. That's not the collective good. That's the individual good. I mean, you didn't need covenants to say you could build a house as tall as the zoning code allows. That wasn't what the covenants were collectively attempting to provide for the members of the community.
Well, then how do you reconcile the argument that we just heard about the conflict between the zoning code and the CCR?
Well, that, I think, is spurious argument. I provided the court yesterday supplemental authority to speak right to the issue, where you have two regulatory enactments or codes or whatever they are, and one goes further than the other and imposes a more stringent regulation. They are not considered to be in conflict. You have a conflict if, and I think Judge Applewick was headed, laying out a hypothesis like that, a hypothetical like that, where, one says you can't be shorter than 30 feet, and the other one says you can't be taller than 30 feet. Then you'd have a conflict. You can't meet both. But the court, these decisions, Champera and the other cases, are very clear that if you have two regulatory enactments and one is more stringent than the other, that is not a conflict, as that term is used in these cases. Turning to the language of the covenant itself.
Now, it's the exact same language that was interpreted in Foster.
Right, but Foster
and,
didn't.
And they've cited all these cases throughout
the
United States.
But Foster, I mean, let's be clear. Foster did not construe one and a half stories, did not construe that as saying the second story is okay as long as it's half the area of the first story. That holding is not in Foster. That is not even discussed in Foster. I mean, all Foster says is that they said that you don't need to translate the one and a half stories into feet and inches. The trial judge didn't err by failing to do that. And the trial judge did not err by construing the one and a half story limitation to effectively be a view protection mechanism. And as long as it, and then the court found that the proposed building violated the view protection mechanism in that CC&R.
So what does half story mean?
Half story means, well, I think, actually the half story probably most likely is referring to a dormer. That's where I think it.
And, or attic?
Or an attic, something that's not a full story. And, they do exist.
Do they exist in this development?
Well, let me show you from the record.
Well, somebody from the audience said
yes. Yeah, I know. is that on now? Yes. So here's from the record. This is CP 115. And
so there are houses that have attics.
Yeah, I don't want to say whether that specifically is in the record or not. It may be. But I wanted to show you what the community looks like. I mean, the houses are built in order to conform to the slope of the land so that each house is lower than the one in front of it. On this picture, you can see the Ma house on the right and the Larson house on the left, or kind of in the middle. And on the next page, I have, let me go two pages. I've compared that picture with CP 36. And on CP 36, this is the drawing. This is the pink is the existing house, which conforms to the pink on the photograph.
Right.
And then you can see the house that they proposed to build is this line. And you can see how out of character it would be, what a view blockage it would be, how it does not conform with any other buildings that in this community that have been built uniformly to comply with the slope of the land and allow the uphill neighbors to have views over the people in front of them.
So what was the intent of the provision, 2.5 stories in height? What does that mean?
I think the intent was to was probably two purposes, A, view protection, and B, sort of the aesthetics of the community, just generally in terms of not wanting to have large buildings looming over you. But given that the plat was named Sound View and that the...
So was it meant to take, because they did amend the CCRs in 1967.
Yes.
Now we have the daylight basement.
Right.
So was it meant to take into account a house that had an attic?
In the amendment in 67?
Well,
or the 2.5 stories generally?
Right.
I think that a 2.5 story house, a house that had 2 stories and then an attic under a sloped roof,
uh-huh,
might well be what they had in mind in terms of providing for the view protection and the aesthetics of that community, yes.
Is that how you think we should interpret it? I mean, is that how the court interpreted it?
Well,
it had to be unambiguous for the court to conclude.
Right. Well, two things on that. One, I don't think you have to apply it to a hypothetical case. As the issue before the court is, does this proposal meet a 2.5 story? Now, that you might have, that there might be some other design that would be closer to the line and that might pose other issues and other conundrums. That's not the issue before the court. The issue before the court is whether this comports with 2.5 stories. The other thing is...
Well, and what does 2.5 stories mean?
Yes, yes. But and do you know that it doesn't
mean
this?
So what is it?
If you will.
Okay, but you have to say what it does mean. And so the dispute below was the Maas were saying, well, it has to mean half of the story below measured by feet and inches. That was their position.
Right.
And the other position was, no, it has to do with height and height only.
Right. Well, and they said feet and inches in terms of the breadth of the story.
Right.
The area that it consumes as opposed to the vertical dimension.
Right.
Right.
Well, since we don't have anyone with expertise in the construction industry defining this, should we send it back and let experts battle it out?
Well, no, I would, in terms of the summary judgment record, there was no evidence presented by either party that anybody in the construction industry had anything to add to this issue. And further, I'd note that I don't think that that you would necessarily turn to the construction industry. In a couple of those out-of-state cases where they did that, they were construing building permits and building codes, and this is a covenant, and not clear to me that a contractor or a building official is the right person to turn to in terms of how would a property owner buying a residential parcel of land construe this. But more to the point, in terms of the record here, there's not a dispute of fact. It's not like one side put in some declarations from a building official and somebody else put in contrary ones. There was no evidence in this record there's no evidence in this record that there's evidence out there to be presented to a trial court. There's no reason for a trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a little hard to read that, but I just wanted to clarify that what you see below the non-highlighted portion, and this, again, is in the appendix, but that all says existing building, and then the highlighted portion is the addition. So the suggestion from a picture taken from the end of the house is that this is some sort of massive rebuilding of an expanded house is simply incorrect representation. Judge Schindler, I believe, hit the nail on the head by pointing out that this was a summary judgment decision, and that should only be had when there is no dispute of fact. Now, counsel has conceded that the record below was essentially based on the circumstances, the rest of the CC&Rs, the zoning code. I would also point out that trial counsel, I think, was reasonable in relying on the fact that there was a Court of Appeals case that had stated that this is what this term means in the construction industry.
That's Foster again.
That's Foster again, yes. But again, it's not a question about the outcome of Foster or suggesting that somehow this court is bound by Foster.
So you're not asking that it be sent back for a trial either. You just say it should be summary judgment the other way.
Yes, I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that half story means a story half the height of the floor below. And as far as the question of whether or not this was meant to encompass an attic is an attic. Everybody knows what an attic is, and I don't know why the drafters would include the term half story.
It may be that because in other parts of the country, that's exactly what half story means. It's using less than the full floor space under the existing roof line on a two-story house.
In other parts of the country, but not in this part of the country.
And I would that everywhere.
But I would also point out that that's also a restriction on area, because the question is whether or not there's livable floor space. If you happen to have a house with a sloped roof, then apparently you get the benefit of a half story. But that's not what this provision states.
What I'm familiar with, it's an allowance of the development of finished space in an attic or other area under the existing roof line under a two-story house. But that's why I asked the question about experts. Neither of you presented any expert testimony about the definition of the term.
That's true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the trial court should.
So we're left with the ordinary meaning of the words then, aren't we?
Right, and the ordinary meaning that has been stated in numerous cases, numerous courts, is that is a story half the area. Thank you. We ask this court to reverse.
Thank you. Our next matter.